This is The Guardian.
Today, the story behind the empty shelves in your local supermarket. How the UK found itself in a supply chain crisis.
Now, do you feel like chicken tonight? Well, if you do, you might be disappointed.
For me, it happened at a branch of KFC. I dropped in to get my favourite thing on the menu, a chicken wrap, whilst driving across England on my summer holiday. But to my horror, what I wanted wasn't available, and when I asked why, I was told it was because of a shortage of staff. What I was experiencing firsthand was the impact of the UK's supply chain crisis, which for the past few months has meant many of us have begun to notice that everyday items are suddenly out of stock.
The supermarkets admit in recent weeks there have been issues with the supply of salads, fruits and berries, yogurts, vegetables and bottled water.
Joanna Partridge is a Guardian business reporter, and this summer she's been keeping a tally of what we're running out of.
So another crushing disappointment for a lot of people this summer was when McDonald's announced that it didn't have milkshakes or soft drinks at quite a few of its restaurants.
Two strawberry milkshakes, please.
Sorry, our milkshake machine isn't working at the moment.
No milkshakes?
No milkshakes, sorry.
Haribo, the German maker of those beloved sweet and sour sweets, said that it was struggling to get some of its products to shops as well. Nando's restaurants, some of those had to close a few weeks ago.
Each day seems to bring yet another announcement from a major company saying that they are putting up prices as they run out of components or stock. And this doesn't seem to be an issue that is going away anytime soon.
Toy retailers have said that parents should buy now, unless they be disappointed at Christmas. And, you know, but buy that toy that is the must-have now that will definitely be out of favour in 4 months' time.
From The Guardian, I'm Rachel Humphreys. Today in Focus, why is the UK running out of everything? Joanna, I've talked about my experience at KFC, but when did you first notice the UK was running out of stuff?
I think like lots of other consumers, at some point over the summer, I went into a corner shop or a supermarket and realised that the shelves weren't quite as well stocked as we've all grown used to seeing, that there were gaps of maybe fresh fruit or salad. I think a thing that's quite important to bring across, though, is that when things aren't appearing on supermarket shelves or at a restaurant, it's not that there aren't enough produce, there aren't enough goods there. It's actually that there are problems getting the goods to where they need to be able to be sold to consumers.
Taking a step back for a second, Joanna, and you reported on business stories for many years. How bad is this supply chain crisis?
Lots of people who work in the logistics industry are saying that they have never seen it this bad, be that with a shortage of HGV drivers or be that with a shortage of workers in warehouses to unpack and repack the goods. So lots of people are saying this is as bad as it has ever been. I think an interesting thing about logistics is it's not a very glamorous industry. It's kind of toiling away in the background, ensuring that you and I go to the supermarket and everything we'd expect to buy is just there, or that the thing you ordered online turns up on your doorstep in a parcel. And partly during the pandemic, but also with the shortages we've been seeing in recent weeks, it's really seen logistics burst out of the background and into the headlines, for mostly for the wrong reasons. And lots of people are suddenly realising quite how complex supply chains are, how many people are involved in the process, and what you need to get goods from where they are to where they need to be.
Summertime should be the season of plenty, but social media users in the UK are complaining of empty supermarket shelves. These pictures show where there are problems. Of course, it's not everywhere. But major retailers such as Sainsbury's and Tesco are warning they're unable to keep all their shops stocked in the way they'd want.
You mentioned a shortage of HGV drivers. Why is this happening and how big a part of the problem is that?
There are lots of things going on at the same time. It was an existing shortage of lorry drivers. It's been an industry where the average age of drivers has kept on getting older and older. It's about 50 in the UK. I guess not enough young people have been attracted to join the profession. And so that's been a problem for quite some time. But in Britain, there's been what really comes across as a toxic triangle of things going on. The pandemic, where you had lots of EU drivers go back to their home countries during COVID and many haven't returned. You also had Brexit on top of that, and the IR35 tax reform, which has put more costs onto some employers as well. All of this has come together to make the situation really bad in Britain at the moment.
It's literally thousands of trucks parked up, according to our members, because they simply don't have drivers to take them out. And of course, the effect on everyone for that is fewer things delivered, because 95% of everything we have in Britain comes on the back of a truck at some point.
The Road Haulage Association, the number that gets quoted quite regularly, is they say there's a shortage of about 100,000 lorry drivers in the UK.
Okay, my name is Stephen Bowles. I'm the managing director of Roy Bowles Transport. The company was set up by my father in the 1950s, and I'm second generation. We specialise in the movement of air cargo in and out of Heathrow Airport.
You say your dad set up the business. When did you first drive a lorry? Do you remember? Like, when did you sort of get started in the trade?
I was driving around the yard at about 11 years old, but legally I was driving a truck from the age of 20.
Okay, and do you have good memories of that time?
Yeah, it was good fun going out on the road and being your captain of your ship, as it were, and getting to know the countryside as a 20-year-old.
I sort of imagine you get quite a power trip from being that high up on the road.
Yeah, well, you can see in people's gardens about anything else.
It's good if you're nosy.
Yeah.
And what about the kind of day-to-day? What is it like to be an HGV driver today?
It can be good. It can be bad. It depends on the job you're doing. My drivers, a lot of them been with me many years. I've got one driver who's been since 1978. But he starts at 7:30 in the morning. He goes over the airport. He's delivering and collecting aircraft containers. And he's going home by 5:00 in the afternoon.
There's been quite a lot of reporting in the last couple of weeks about how difficult the job can be.
A lot of it's unsociable hours, weekends, nights, and also staying in like lorry parks like this. This isn't actually a bad one. This one's all right. But there's only 3 showers here for all of these men. 3 showers. So staying in places like this, sometimes their bosses won't pay for them to stay in services. They've got to stay in laybys.
Is that something that you're familiar with?
Yeah, it is difficult if you're doing long distance and you're away from home 5 nights a week and you're stuck in a cab with only a microwave dinner for tea. No, what can I put it, toilet facilities or shower facilities. Sitting in a lay-by overnight and where you're an unpaid watchman is not my idea of fun.
How much does it cost to train someone as an HGV driver? I mean, I have a driving licence, but I would not say, Steve, I'm very confident behind the wheel of any large vehicle. What would I need to become one of your drivers?
No doubt you'll get a Class 2, which is sort of, it's like a car and a caravan behind it. To do your class, what I would class as a Class 2, will cost, I don't know, £2,000 or £3,000. And then to upgrade to an Arctic, which is the biggest on the road, the 44-tonners, you're talking maybe another £1,500. So overall, about £5,000-£6,000, something in that region. I can't see why an 18-year-old, they leave school, they've got O-level, GCSEs, I'm sorry, I'm just an old fool who knows the old terms, and A-levels, and they can go and get a student loan to become a lawyer or a doctor or whatever. But they can't go and get a student loan to say, I want to become an HGV driver. That really upsets me.
Joanna, we've heard from Steve about the challenges of training HGV drivers. You've been reporting on this and went to find out a bit more. Where did you go and who did you speak to?
To try and get a view of what's really happening, I went to a very glamorous location of an industrial estate just outside of Bristol, which is a distribution centre for a bathroom furniture company. And it's all the transport is managed by the logistics firm Wincanton, which is taking on more HGV driver apprentices on their apprenticeship programme than they've ever done before to try and start to build up more younger drivers. Well, why did you decide to become an apprentice?
Because I think it's a very good opportunity, especially at this moment with all the driver shortages.
So Wincanton are taking on a lot more apprentices who, over 12 months, learn the ropes of logistics while working in a warehouse or distribution centre at the same time as getting HGV driving training. Have you actually been in one of the big HGVs?
No, actually, I haven't.
You haven't been in one yet?
I haven't been yet, but I would love to go.
The idea is that during that period, they learn the ropes of logistics working in a warehouse or a distribution centre, and at the same time are getting some driving training of HGVs. They're Class 2 and they're Class 1, so that is vehicles up to 33 tonnes and up to 44 tonnes. So really big, articulated trucks that carry a lot of goods. So the idea is that they sit both of those tests, and then provided they pass during their apprenticeship, they are off and on the road and can then work as HGV drivers. Where have you been so far?
I've been to some really nice places around the UK. For a week, I travelled more than through the whole time I've been in UK. UK countryside is really beautiful.
And that's part of the reason that you think this would be better than working in a warehouse?
Yeah, because when you work in the warehouse, you see the same place, you're doing the same thing again and again. When I'm out on the road, I can see some beautiful nature, and also I'm getting paid to travel.
All the drivers I spoke to and the apprentices say that something they're just aware of is that you have to be so much more observant than when you're in a car, really looking out for people ahead of you, potential obstacles. You have to react much more quickly because the braking process takes a lot longer because it's such a heavy vehicle. It's a job that comes with quite a hefty degree of responsibility, actually. People who, not only do they need to be trained up and pass the tests to be legally allowed to drive that vehicle, but a bit like when you pass your driving test for the first time, you've got to then get some experience and get that road sense of what it's like to be behind the wheel of a big vehicle.
This does not sound like a very quick process. Did you speak to people at the centre about this and the difficulty in getting people trained up quickly enough for the problem we have at the moment?
Theoretically, you could learn to drive one of these big trucks. There are some places that offer it in a week to drive a 33-tonne truck, but it's also a massive backlog for HGV driving tests. They are still clearing the COVID backlog of people waiting for tests. So it's about a three-month delay at the moment to get your test. And then you would need to pass it first time. And if you want to drive the biggest trucks, these 44-tonne ones, then you'd have to sit two HGV driver licences to be able to do that. So everyone I've been speaking to in the industry has been telling me this is not a quick fix.
So lorry drivers are one critical part of the supply chain, and we have a shortage of those, as you say, at the moment. But are there other issues within that supply chain that are also leading to empty shelves?
Yes, there are. And that's part of the reason that it's been such a problem over the last few months, and really, actually, since the start of the pandemic. COVID obviously spread right across the world, and so it's really disrupted international freight routes, international shipping.
So China's second largest port in the eastern city of Ningbo halted operations on Wednesday after an employee tested positive for coronavirus. The shutdown could add more pressure to strained global supply chains.
There's been, even in recent weeks, a lockdown of a terminal at Ningbo.
The Ningbo port is particularly crucial to global trade, handling 19 million shipping containers so far this year through July.
Also, with the complete collapse of a lot of international air travel, you didn't have as many planes going, which might have had some cargo in the hold of a passenger plane. Not just been road freight that's been affected, but it's also been shipping things by sea and by air as well.
Britain's economic recovery is being held back by labour shortages. The latest to highlight them, the big business group, the CBI, which reports gaps from farmers' fields to shop and factory.
Another problem that's been taking place is just a labour shortage. especially seasonal workers who come in to pick soft fruit in the UK haven't come in as much, even though there is a visa pilot system that allows 30,000 people to come in. But lots of people didn't want to come here during lockdowns or because of Brexit. EU workers have decided to continue working somewhere else in the EU.
Interestingly, the vet that used to come and do RTV testing was Greek. I mean, it's a really tough job, that job. He went back to Greece before COVID because he didn't feel welcome here.
And I've spoken to quite a few farmers who've told me the problems they've had with fruit or other produce being ready to pick and not having the number of people available to pick it. One blueberry farmer in Herefordshire told me that they'd lost about £100,000 worth of produce. You're hearing very similar stories about a whole range of other different produce. Pig farmers have really sounded the alarm because they had a lot of pigs that were ready to go to slaughter. And when they're of that age, they're growing, I think, by a kilo a day. So they really need to go off to slaughter at the time that the farmer has decided. But there weren't enough people necessarily working in slaughterhouses. And that may be then what leads to lack of meat on shelves.
You've spent the last few weeks speaking to representatives from various industries. What have they said to you about what they think can fix this or what they would like to see happen?
There have been a lot of calls, especially from the food and drink industry, for a short-term, what they called COVID recovery visa.
Everyone knows that we desperately need drivers. The Home Office are still preventing people coming to this country to work as drivers.
So to allow in, on a temporary basis, more EU workers to come here to help pick crops or lorry drivers or even as butchers or vets, for example.
So basically allowing people just in for a short period of time to do these jobs to just kind of clear the backlog, really.
Maybe a 6-month visa that would allow extra workers from the EU, but also from elsewhere in the world, to come in to help in the industries where there really are shortages.
Farmers like Nick say they need 30,000 extra workers this season alone. The hospitality industry says it's 180,000 short. Meat processors say they're 5,000 short.
Now, the industry is very careful to say that they don't want this to be a solution permanently, but they think in this period of sort of recovering from COVID and also shortly after Brexit, that they think this would help to ease the squeeze a bit.
With widespread concern about the HGV driver crisis, I've been contacted by a number of drivers from Ceredigion who believe the decision to increase drivers' hours will fail to solve the problem.
And what has the government said about this?
So far, Kwasi Kwarteng, for example, the business secretary, has said that companies should hire UK-based workers, and that's been very much the call from government. The Department of Transport has relaxed some regulations about drivers' hours, so HGV drivers could drive for a bit longer legally. But again, people say they don't feel this is really a way to solve the current problem.
I thank the honourable gentleman. I also thank him for notice of his question. We're working with industry to get more people into HGV driving, which is a great and well-remunerated profession, including by ramping up vocational test capacity, funding apprenticeships for people training as a lorry driver.
Why would the government be so against doing this if it sounds like it would solve the issues and only on a short-term visa basis?
I guess it's a policy question. The mantra very much from the government at the moment is that British companies should be looking at training up and hiring more British workers. I suppose they also say that the Brexit vote showed that British people wanted less immigration.
Coming up, how supply chain issues could hit Christmas. Steve, the message from the government seems quite clear. They want you or businesses like yours to try and recruit workers who are already able to work in the UK. What do you make of that?
That's the long-term solution, quite honestly. We need assistance and we need it now. We need them to allow HGV drivers to be put on the essential worker, Home Office essential worker list. That will allow drivers from the EU to come back to the UK and work here. Logistics is the most vital thing to every industry. Without trucks, you don't deliver newspapers. Without trucks, you don't deliver milk. It's important that the government see us as essential users.
How damaging has Brexit been to staffing your business?
It's been pretty critical, quite honestly. I've turned away a lot of work. I've got into some embarrassing situations with a couple of my clients, which I really didn't like.
What, where you have to say, I can't do that because we don't have the staff?
I can't do that job, you know, which I normally do. And they understand, I'm very pleased to say. But how long that understanding will be there until somebody turns around and says, hey, I've got a driver today, I could do Bowles's work, no problem at all, is my great fear. I've never seen a driver shortage like this in the industry. And I know my father never had anything like that in his lifetime.
How practical is it to say, oh, it's fine, you can just recruit these drivers from the UK? I mean, how much more does that cost you? How much more time does that take?
A bit like Marie Antoinette saying, let them eat cake, quite honestly. I'm quite upset by the government's policies on that. I'm a great supporter of this government. But on the other hand, I don't really think that they know what's going on.
We've seen lots of reports, haven't we, in the past couple of weeks of companies putting their wages up an awful lot. Is that something that you could do to attract more workers?
We have increased our wages significantly and we can't keep those costs in the company. So our rates have gone up accordingly.
When you go into the supermarket now and you see the empty shelves or you see certain products not in stock, what do you think? You know that this system, Steve, you know what's going wrong.
Yeah, I look at it and I go, yep, told you so. And when my wife comes back and she says, I couldn't get my favourite brand of milk, she says, that's the driver shortage again, Steve, isn't it? Monday night, I went to buy some salad. There was absolutely no salad in that supermarket. And I thought, yeah, okay. And I knew exactly what the problem was. And I can see the shortage is getting worse, quite honestly. And it could start to hit vital parts of the logistic industry, not just a bag of salad.
Joanna, listening to Steve, it's clear that the government's proposed solution to this, which is recruiting British people to do these jobs, essentially a complete restructuring of our economy, is going to take a long time, isn't it?
It's not going to be sorted overnight, and this is something that's been discussed in terms of rebalancing the UK economy for about as long as I can remember. I guess, you know, some people would argue that while Britain was in the EU, it was very easy to just tap into a ready pool of EU nationals who could seamlessly travel to Britain and work here and maybe would put up with lower wages than UK nationals might. But equally, anything that needs to change following the pandemic and following Brexit, there isn't a short-term fix. There's no magic bullet for this.
Steve talked about how he's had to put up wages for his drivers, and there have been reports of HGV drivers being offered big sign-on bonuses to try and make these roles more attractive. Wages have stagnated in this country for some time. So could a silver lining of this crisis be that people get paid a proper salary for what are often very difficult jobs?
Yes, certainly. It looks like there are rising wages in a number of areas, which is a good thing for people working in those industries. Lots of trade unions are calling on workers, especially in certain areas, to know their worth and demand higher wages as well. But I have to caveat this, that if companies are having to spend a lot more on logistics, the chances are it will lead to higher prices in the shops. It will feed through. The companies won't absorb those costs.
I think we all remember, Joanna, that last Christmas wasn't the one that a lot of us have been hoping to have. You know, we weren't able to all spend it with friends and family, and it was quite disappointing for a lot of people. This year, we might be looking forward to a more sociable Christmas, but could it be one with many fewer gifts and perhaps slightly emptier plates?
That could be something that potentially happens. It does feel that we are running up to a pinch point of a lot of these supply chain problems around that really busy period for retail and for Christmas socialising, sort of from Black Friday at the end of November up until Christmas.
There will be a shortage of pumpkins for Halloween, and there will be a shortage of turkeys at Christmas.
People in the logistics industry have told me that this Christmas bodes to be sort of the reverse of last year, where last year you had all of the stock available, but people were maybe cautious about going into shops. And this year, people are probably more likely to want to be willing to spend this Christmas and to socialise with family and friends, hopefully, in the way they weren't able to last year. But they might not be able to buy the products that they wanted to buy.
So start getting your crackers now then, basically, if at all possible. Joanna, thank you very much for speaking to me.
Thank you.
That was Joanna Partridge and Steve Bowles. Joanna and the rest of the Guardian business team have written lots about the crisis in the UK's supply chain. You can find it all at theguardian.com, including a great piece by Richard Partington, who has tracked a cup of takeaway coffee from source to explain how the climate emergency, COVID and Brexit have disrupted that particular supply chain. Also, I'd really recommend reading a comment piece Aditya Chakraborty wrote a couple of weeks ago called "Empty Shelves Are the Only Way Britain's Underpaid Workers Can Grab National Attention," which goes back decades to trace the roots of the UK's supply problems. That's it for today. Thanks to Joanna and Steve for speaking to me. This episode was produced by Sammy Kent. Sound design was by Rudy Zagadlo. The executive producers are Phil Maynard and Archie Bland. We'll be back tomorrow.
This is The Guardian.